Together Again by Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. This week we will be talking about affordable housing for homeless veterans with Mr. Jonathan James Bond and Mr. Zane Smith. Also, an in-studio interview and performance by poets Michelle Autry and Andrea Ross. But first, I would like to update the prison hunger strike at Pelican Bay State Prison. The 20-day prison strike that began July the 1st and ended July the 20th and resumed Monday, September the 26th, 2011, to protest the conditions of prisoners in the security housing unit, also known as the SHU. This is day 8 of the strike. We will keep you updated every week on this show. If you would like to call in to the Qumran Report during the show, the number is 800-893-9562. I am delighted to have with us in the studio tonight two very talented poets, writers, and performing artists, Michelle Autry and Andrea Ross. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you so much.
Michelle, I would like to start with you by playing a short tape of one of your past performances of a piece entitled Judge America.
Opportunity, because I remember the Black Wall Street, Rosewood, and Tuskegee. Judge America, it has never been the land of the free, where these evil scientists can experiment and then cover up what they do to people living in the streets and even those like me. Judge America, it has never been the home of the brave, where the enemy raped and killed those that they made slaves. Judge America, for it has never been the land of equality unless your skin was white as can be. But for those that are righteous, even they suffer because they can see that it's just something wrong in this land of the unreality. Judge America, where the Pilgrim's Pride caused millions of Native Americans to die, and still today downtown, the rich steal, lie, and kill as they regentrify. Judge America, the country's government lives the greatest of all lives. It is not Christian. It's never been. Judge America, how can it be? For Christianity means that you duplicate the life that Christ died, that he lived and died for. Now, are you beginning to see more clearly? For I know Jesus never invaded and killed husbands and wives and children in the name of God. This country is controlled by, I could say, the KKK, the Mormons, or the Catholics. Oh, it might change from day to day. Nazis, who knows, but I know it's not my God, so it might even be the Skull and Bones. I know Christ was a one-man arsenal in God's spiritual military. He never invaded other lands to massacre his fellow man. He never raped or pillaged a woman and violated and desecrated the African for his fear and hatred's sake. Jesus the Christ would never ever lynch or hang a man from a tree and then laugh and lie and said, oh, he was bad, he was dirty, he deserved it. You see, on the contrary, American is purely evil. It's full of inhumanity. And until that day has changed in my heart, I cannot say God bless America, but I can't say judge America. I'd rather say fuck America, but I will say judge America until that day comes and we really do have equality, ethics and morals and values that all enjoy. Then we can walk freely in these streets. But you've got the rich and you've got the poor in one of the richest countries. It's like they the Babylon, the whore of Babylon. So I'm going to say judge America because I cannot bless it. Because it's not me anymore, it's the Lord. Judge America. each one of them, each and every day. We live in this community, so let's make it into what we want it to be.
Michelle, I think that's a beautiful and relevant piece of work.
Well, thank you, Melvin. Actually, I don't want to be offensive, but when I wrote that poem, when it came to me, it was entitled "Fuck America." I'm not going to say that again, but I just, you know, on the real. But that was the only time I had the courage, actually, to perform that piece, was at that open mic.
Okay, Michelle, look, yes, at that open right mic, I remember that. Tell us a little about yourself and how you develop your art form.
Well, my name is Yvonne Michelle Autry. I go by my middle name, no schizo, and I was born in Inglewood 45 years ago. And I had an early love and a desire to write, and I was encouraged, thank God, by some really wonderful instructors and my parents. So I started writing when I started learning languages when I was very young. And however, the specific genre of poetry evolved, or I started to evolve as a poetess about 15 or 20 years ago, just after I had completed a period of study at UCLA. And I encountered a lot of institutionalized white supremacy, institutionalized racism that was hidden. And I had a spiritual awakening exactly 20 years ago, actually this past June. And the Lord was like, you know, I gave you these gifts and express what you've seen. Testify, bear witness, and I'll keep you alive. Yeah, because the Lord delivered me from some situations involving secret societies, very wealthy people in this government. And most people that have lived to talk are either marginalized or in the street. I said those that live, because most of them are dead. And so I started to write about my experiences. I wrote some articles, but I started to, you know, get a lot of free flows. And I'd always loved to write and thought, you know, about the rhyme, but then I was starting to just really write it down. And then I started to perform at Midnight Special Bookstore in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. I was living in Inglewood at the time. Wherever I could, I felt like, okay, I need to say this, because, you know, these people were trying to kill me. They're still smearing my image. I was, you know, falsely accused of many things. I was hospitalized. You know, my child was illegally detained by the Department of Children and Family Mm-hmm. Services. But I had been writing before that happened. That's been 10 years. I had been writing for about 10 years prior to that. So it evolved as a vehicle for me to express gratitude to the Most High for delivering me, and then describing what God had delivered me and is continuing to deliver me from. Because a lot of Americans don't know why they're sick, why they're homeless, why they don't have their children, why they think they're crazy. And a lot of, you know, these some of my experiences help to describe some of the population control mechanisms, experiments on people. And so I feel like I was led to use my gift of poetry
To write about those things.
But I write about everything.
Let me ask you this then, Michelle. Who are some of the writers and poets that influence you?
Well, a lot of the writers of the Bible, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love David. David mm-hmm. is one of my favorite writers. I love the book of David. And even though some of it is in prose.
David the Beloved.
Yeah, I love David. I don't know, mm-hmm. I feel real, I'm inspired. I just love David. I love Matthew and Daniel as well. But David, but of course, Mary Baraka and Maya Angelou and most of the African-American writers.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Okay, Michelle, for those who want to get in touch with you for speaking or performing, what is your contact information?
Well, my email is michellelivefire@yahoo.com. That's michellelivefire, as in God goes out like a burning fire, not hellfire.
Okay.
I made that clear. I don't want to get no emails from no devil worshippers, because that's happened. At yahoo.com.
At yahoo.com. Okay. Give it one more time. Michelle Livefire at yahoo.com.
Yes, Melvin, that's it.
Thank you, Michelle. We would be hearing from you and the voices from the Ether portion of the show.
And if I could just say thank you, thank you, thank you, Drama Stage, Kumon. Thank you, Melvin. Thank you, Earl. God bless.
Thank you, Michelle. Next, I would like to turn to another very talented poet, writer, and performer, Andrea Ross. I want to start by playing an interview we did with you on June the 30th, 2011.
Hi, my name is Susan. I'm sitting here with Andrea Ross, and Andrea Ross is a poet, and she's involved with Drama Stage Qumran. Is that right, Andrea?
That's correct.
Okay. Would you like to tell me how you got started and or interested in Drama Stage Qumran, first of all?
Well, initially, I was introduced to Drama Stage production group by the late, great Sunji Ali. He is my mentor. He recognized some talent, blatant talent in me that he kind of pulled it out of me, because I really wasn't a performing artist, more so a writer than anything, but he noticed that I might have a little more than just writing in my repertoire, and I owe that to him, the fact that I'm working now with the Drama Stage.
Very good. I'm familiar with Sunji Ali as well, and could you tell us more? How did you meet him? How did he meet you?
Sunji and I met... He had a book signing, and I was at the bookstore, and I was interested. I was asking questions, inquisitive that I am, and one thing led to another, and he had me meet him at his school site, which was not too far from where I was living at the time, and we struck up a conversation, and I guess the rest is history, as I say.
Very good. What was the bookstore called? Remember?
Eshawan Bookstore on La Brea.
On La Brea? Very good.
Yes.
Very nice. So how long did you know him before he passed away?
I might have known Sunji maybe 2.5 to 3 years. He had a frontline poetry ensemble that a friend of mine bought me an application. I applied, and he accepted me in the ensemble. And one thing led to another. From there, we started working together, different venues, the Exchange being one of them, and I've just blossomed ever since.
I know. I see you. You're really good, Andrea. I love you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Were you homeless? Have you ever been homeless?
Yes, I have been homeless.
Could you tell me about that experience? How has it affected you and the rest of your life afterwards, after that business?
Well, it's quite profound, because my homeless situation was more voluntary. What preceded my homelessness was a dysfunctional relationship. And after 26 years, I just walked away with my purse and what I had on my body. And it was a voluntary homeless situation. But I must admit that even though I was homeless, I was so happy, because I finally had self-autonomy over my person and my being. I mean, I can't tell you how priceless it is just to be able to say, oh, I like to wear a white dress, as opposed to, you know, not wearing anything at all. But I'm making light of it, but it really was a serious situation. Domestic violence. I'm quite sure leads to a lot of homelessness amongst the female population. And that would be my story.
Okay. How many women do you think are homeless down in the Skid Row area?
Oh, wow. If I had to guess, knowing that any night there might be 80,000 to 100,000 homeless people in L.A., I would like to say maybe at least half of that would probably be women, and maybe even children. So I would say maybe 50%. I could be wrong, but it's close.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you there. So what are you going to do today for us? Today,
another member of the Drama Stage Qumran production group, Lee Shaw, and I will be performing a skit out of the Nailheads play, which is symbolic of the homeless crisis that we have downtown here in L.A. and all over the world, as a matter of fact. But we're focusing on L.A. because this is where we reside, and we have hands-on, you know, input into the homeless crisis here. And Nailheads is a play that addresses that situation, the nailhead being one nail collected for each homeless person on the streets. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping to collect 80,000 to 100,000 nails to promote building of homes for these people to be housed in, as opposed to living on the streets.
Okay. Okay, Andrea, thank you so much. That was wonderful.
Thank you so much appreciate for having it. Me. I appreciate
You're
it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yes, that was Miss Andrea Ross in the interview done June 30, 2011. Andrea, tell us a little about yourself and how you develop your art form.
Okay, well, originally I'm from New Rochelle, New York, on the East Coast, and I came to California in 1978, to Northern California, actually, Castle Air Force Base, where I had my first daughter. And I think I came to Southern California in 1980. But as a writer, I studied speech pathology and audiology and an English minor at Hampton Institute in the 70s. It's now a university, so they've gotten a little more acclaimed now. But at the time, I developed my writing skills, I would say, 6-7 years old. My mother still has work that I wrote when I was 6 and 7 years old, and I've always had an affinity for writing, but I've taken it now to another level. I'm also an illustrator and writer of children's literature. I've written 6 children's books, and I'm on a mission to get them published as we speak. So my writing abilities have been with me for quite a while.
When did you start performing poetry?
I started performing maybe 4 years ago. I mentioned that Sunji Ali, a great literary pundit who's passed away last year, he was a great, well-renowned man in the L.A. Literary Society. And as I said before, he noticed something in me. Although I was just a writer, he encouraged me to speak out, be heard. It's one thing to have it on paper, and it's another thing for an audience to appreciate what you have to say in your message. So to that end, I met him at an open mic in West L.A., and he introduced me to the Frontline Poetry Ensemble, and consequently, I met you at his book signing at the Echelon Bookstore, and the rest, as they say, is her story, not history.
Okay, who are some of the writers and poets that influence you?
My number one influence would be Maya Angelou. Second to that, Langston Hughes and all the great writers from the Renaissance, the Harlem Renaissance. And shout out to Nikki Giovanni. She kept it real and raw back in the 70s and 80s, and I always admired her style. So I kind of pulled from all of those entities. And once I met Sunji Ali, he really just gave me a thirst to be heard and to speak out on issues that lie dormant most of the time, like domestic violence and gangs and, you know, things that are prevalent in the society today. So if I had to say, I would say in Drama Stage, let me not forget Drama Stage, Qumran, that have me on the front line in their performances, and I really appreciate that. And Melvin, that's a kudo to you, and Tyrone and Elaine and all the fine people that have set the stage and enabled me and enhanced my abilities, and I thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about a piece that you will be doing in the Voices for the Ether portion of the show. It's a piece that's called What's Real. I think, can you tell us, how did that come about? What was the inspiration, and when did you write that piece? I think it's a very relevant piece.
And it's funny that you should say it's relevant, because actually, that piece was written 1981, 1982. And it came about, I worked for the Compton Unified School District as a bus operator and truck driver from 79 until 88. And one day, as I was taking the children home, my route consisted of the teenage mothers in Compton.
You know, they were like my number one priority. And I was driving one day and I looked up in the mirror and I saw all these young, young faces, but they also had children. I think the youngest one was 11 and she had two children already. And then the oldest was maybe 16 and she had three children. And I said, these kids do not know what's real. What is really going on? And 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, the piece was completed. And that was the inspiration for that piece.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Okay, Andrea, for those who would like to get in touch with you for speaking engagements or performing, what is your contact information?
Well, right now I don't have my email address. My computer has crashed on me, but they can always contact me through you, Drama Stage Qumran, and my cell number is 323-601-3651, and you can call me at any time.
Thank you, Andrea. We will be hearing from you and the voices from the Ether portion of the show.
Thank you, Melvin.
At this time, I would like to turn it over to Miss Earlene Anthony for our community calendar.
This is the community calendar for the month of October. Thursday, October the 6th at 6 p.m., D-Link, Downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council, invites you to attend a community forum, a town hall meeting to discuss the future of the Persian Hotel. The Persian Hotel is located on 5th and Main. This forum will be held at the LAPD headquarters, Ronald Deaton Civic Auditorium, 100 West 1st Street, between Spring and Main. Sunday, October the 23rd, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran presents a forum on homeless veterans in Los Angeles. Discussion topics such as outreach, education, treatment and prevention, housing support services, income, employment benefits, community partnership, and much more. The location, The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street. Refreshments will be served. We'll also pass out hygiene kits. This is a free event, and for more information, you can contact 323-850-4436. This is a special announcement. Wednesday, October the 26th, beginning at 9 in the morning, Long Beach Community Councilman D. Andrews present a Peace and Justice Summit focusing on deciding how to assist with policy change and the reentry process, housing, employment, and much more. Child care and lunch will be provided. The location, the Long Beach Convention Center, 300 East Ocean Boulevard, Long Beach, California. For more information, 323-357-8431. The event for Sunday, October the 9th, Peace and Nonviolent Block Party has been canceled until further notice, and it will be rescheduled. And this is just a reminder, if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. We have with us in the studio Mr. Jonathan James Barnes. He is the co-founder and executive director of Serene Haven Incorporated, a transitional and permit housing for homeless veterans and substance abuse recovery. We also have with us Mr. Zane Smith, who is a veteran. Jonathan and Zane, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Melvin.
Jonathan, tell us a little about your background and how you got into this kind of work.
Well, I actually never served for this country. And reason being, more or less what I have here quoted, the willingness with which our young people are likely to serve in a war, no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive the veterans of earlier wars were treated and appreciated by the nation. That's President George Washington to Congress, USA. Reason why I quote that is the mere fact that my uncle, John Henry Barnes, my dad's second youngest brother, he's a Vietnam vet, And due to him not agreeing to want to go back and serve, they just gave him a dishonorable discharge. They pulled him of all his ranking. Any benefits. And he has dealt with chronic homelessness since 1971. Actually, November of 1971. Up until, it's shameful. Up until April 1st of this year, I found my uncle and got him his very first apartment at the age of 62.
Huh. And this was the inspiration for getting you involved in this kind of work?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can anyone willingly or unwillingly wanting to sacrifice the greatest thing a human being possibly can, their soul, their life, for this country, and by decision or not, have to suffer in such a way? It will give you additional background. For 10 plus years, I provided executive residential and property protection to bodyguard. And one of my senior officers, Richard Dixon, retired LAPD, he said that here in this country, how can a person that commit a crime be treated better than someone who fights for this country? A criminal can, if you want to leave prison early, you have to go to halfway housing. You have to be housed. You have to seek employment. You have to seek education, things of that nature. But if you want to step away from this government or from fighting for the military, if you want to step away, then it's pretty much, you know, they give you a salute, a handshake, and a letter of accommodation, whatever the case may be. Now, mind you, I'm not trying to step on the situation, whatever the case may be. That's a mere fact that we are here as Serene Haven Incorporated to provide housing for who we know are the true heroes of this country.
Let's talk
the American veteran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. Because I'm a veteran myself out of my family of seven boys and two girls. Six of us served in the military. Three in the Army, two in the Air Force, and I served in the Marine Corps.
Yes, sir. Simplified.
Yeah, 1969 to 71. Tell me about the Serene Haven, the type of services that they offer to veterans. Give us a good look at what Serene Haven is.
Oh, well, basically, Serene Haven, it's rather basic, in which some people may not think it might be important, but it's of great importance. We provide transitional and permanent housing. More so, we're establishing permanent housing to where an individual will have the chance to rebuild themselves. To more or less, when you work hard every day, you would like to have a good, stable, safe and secure living environment to where you can say, this is the fruits of my labor. This is why I work so hard, so I can come home to live in an environment to where it's not poverty stricken. It's not, or just a tad bit poverty, above poverty stricken. This is why I work so hard, and not only why I work so hard, but the reason why I put my life on the line for this country.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of housing that we provide for the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Is Zane Smith sitting here to my left? That is more or less, if we don't feel comfortable living there, a vet will not live there.
Mm-hmm.
That's disrespectful. I mean, it's a debacle.
Yeah, I'm going to get to Dwayne and obviously, excuse me, I'm going to get to Zane.
Yes, sir.
In just a minute, just a couple more questions.
Yes, sir.
Is it is it co-ed, male and female veterans, or now is it just male veterans, or what?
Oh, no, it's veteran period.
Yeah,
I mean, actually, we have male, is Zane Smith here, has one of the apartment buildings. Also, we have Miss Taylor. She's a OEF, OIF, OEF, Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom. And she is finally, this will be the first time that she'll be able to live with her children. They're 11 to 12 years old, going on 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's saddening, but I mean, other than complaining about it, this is what I, as well as my business partner, Matthew J. Heslin, this is what we're doing about it, other than just complaining about it.
Mm-hmm. And let me say this. This is one of the reasons that we're holding a homeless veteran forum on Sunday, October the 23rd, 4 to 6 o'clock. We have some guests coming out, Mr. Jeff Norman, Ricky Reyes. We're going to assess the needs of the homeless veterans, and we want to hear from some of these veterans themselves coming out of their mouth. I'm going to come back to you in a minute. Yes, Let me go over to Zane. Tell us a little about yourself and how you got involved with Serene Haven.
My name is Zane Smith. I am a gang interventionist, and I speak to children about gangs and but what it is, I'm wound up becoming homeless, fighting to get my children out of the Children and Family Services. The young lady that spoke earlier, Michelle, I met her many years ago, and I'm just not recognizing who Michelle is. I wound up becoming homeless and lost my home in a foreclosure, fighting to get my children out of the system. And I was a truck driver. I came off the road and had just taken a loan out of my house to get me a truck to start my own business. And, man, I wound up fighting to get my kids, but they wasn't trying to give me my kids because I was, I think it was bigger than me. I just put it this way. I really feel like people didn't want me to go to South Africa and talk to the kids about the gangs situation because of my story that I have. And I really feel like my children were purposely not given to me. I don't have a jail record. I don't have anything. I've been to the military with honorable discharges, and I still became homeless. And then wind up losing my kids, then wind up losing my home. And then when I was able to try to get my kids, they said, well, you don't have a place for them. So it was just damn if you do, damn if you don't. So I met Mr. Jonathan Barnes, and Mr. Jonathan Barnes... introduced me to the Serene Haven program, and I really became inspired through the VASH program, which gives vets Section 8. I was having some very hard times trying to get a Section 8 through VASH in the very beginning, but what they did, they changed their whole staff. They got rid of the old staff, and now the current staff that's over there at the Wilshire District, they're doing such a great job helping the vets right now get Section 8 that I was able to get a Section 8 within like a month.
Oh, that's great.
And the first person I talked to was Mr. Jonathan Barnes. And when I talked to him, he went right to bat for me. I mean, like a soldier. I mean, it's like he was really wanting to help me. And I seen this in this kid's eyes, and I'm like, this guy is serious. So, and when I followed him up and I went to one of the programs, and they had some very, very nice places set up for the veterans. And right now I have a 2-bedroom apartment, and I have been homeless for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And, but now, I mean, thanks to the Serene Haven, company, man, they're doing a great and wonderful job. My apartment is immaculate. It's beautiful. I mean, it's like home. It really is home for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, I'm very happy with it.
Okay, let me now. You know, it's some amazing stats in relationship to the homeless as it relates to veterans. The last count of all the homeless that you have in the United States of America. Over the years of the age of 25, 43% are veterans. Yeah. So that leads me, I want to get some of your personal opinions on can you talk a little about how most veterans end up homeless? Let's start with you, Zane, and then we'll go with Jonathan.
Okay, actually, like I said, out here, there's still a lot of racism, white-collar racism still going on in our country. A lot of these guys, in spite of the fact that they're veterans, they're not getting the jobs. And a lot of that is causing guys to have no hope, and they're getting out, they're going out into the streets, and they're starting to drink, do drugs, whatever other problems they may have had from the military.
From the military.
You know, because a lot of guys have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And these guys are really wanting to do something positive like work, and they wound up becoming homeless. I worked at I wound up living at the Union Rescue Mission for 3 years, and I worked in the contact office where I did intake, and I welcomed the guys into the program. And man, it was so many veterans that were homeless that I just couldn't believe it. I'm talking about women with children. So, you know, when you see this kind of situation, I really felt like God had allowed me to become homeless so I could see the real world that I was living in, because this homeless situation was not a joke, and it's really getting worse and worse by the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Jonathan? What do you see in terms of the main reason we see so many homeless veterans?
Well, from what I've gathered, working with individuals like Mr. Zane Smith, as well as others, you're put through boot camp several weeks or whatever the case may be, and you're taught three things: take orders, survive, and kill. Plain and simple. For the next several years of your life, you take orders, survive, and kill. But if you want to walk away, what are you taught? Nothing. Reason why I say that, the leadership is not there because your mind has been conduced to follow orders. If someone's not there to tell these veterans, these true heroes of this country, on what to do now that they want to leave from the military, what are they going to do? They're going to convert back to the second two things: survive and kill. They don't want somebody to sit up there and say, oh, you can or can't do. Oh no, you're not my senior officer. You're not my commanding officer. I don't care unless you're my parent or not. You don't have the ranking to tell me what to do, so they convert back. This is just going off of what analogy I've come off of. They're going to convert back to what they've done for the past several years of their life. They get into the trenches. They're going to get in the streets, because that's a reminder of being in the field, being either in the jungle or in the sand environment, whatever the case may be. So, I mean, until they have that proper transition back into society, you convert. I mean, it's human nature. Mm-hmm. What do you do? What do you do? You do what you know to do best. That's what you've been taught from either childhood or as well as going through the military, as well as working in corporate America, whatever the case may be.
Let me ask you this, then. What are some of the things that the community and the family members can do to help homeless veterans? Let me start with you, Jonathan, and then we go to Zane.
Oh, yes, sir. Acknowledge, show your appreciation, and not to bullshit them, because I mean that's the last thing they need to hear. It's some bullshit. Seriously, they don't need we're gonna pat you on the back and this and that. Then yeah, kick to the side. A veteran should not want or need for anything. They should not. They should be top priority.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the truth.
Okay. What do you think, Zane?
What was that question?
How important is the, what can the community and family do to help homeless veterans?
Well, I think that they should really actually just come together and rally. I know personally, I've been going after my real estate license, and I've been in school right now, and I got one more class before I take my test, and hoping that the market changes in a few years, market changes, you know. But at the same time, I'm getting ready to try to purchase some property, because right now, even though the property is low, it's like a buyer's market right now. I'm trying to purchase some property and actually use my own money to try and buy some apartments and start working with the vets too, because I've seen the need for homeless people out here in our community. And I'm taking a step forward to do what I can do to help. I will not just be helping the homeless vets, but I'm looking forward to helping young homeless women with children who have no support other than just themselves and the kids. No male support, no fatherly support. You know, I'm looking forward to try to help helping some of these people? Because they're out there, and I mean, I've been out there in the trenches, and it's really bad, and we need to step forward and start doing whatever we can to help the homeless population out there.
Okay, thank you, Zane. Jonathan, I would like to read something that you said inspired you.
Yes, sir.
And Jonathan James Barnes have an uncle who is a Vietnam veteran and has suffered from chronic homelessness since 1971. Mm. After 40 years of suffering from homelessness, Jonathan located him on April the 1st, 2011, helped his uncle move into his very first apartment at the age of 62 years old. This experience inspired Jonathan even more so as a co-founder of Serene Haven Incorporated to eradicate homelessness among the true heroes of this country, the American veterans. Jonathan has dedicated countless time and effort towards this mission in order to prevent other homeless veterans from suffering as long as his uncle did.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us how that came about? Just a little about that.
Well, I spoke to my friend, my business partner, Soloff. He's my Soloff. Soloff means brother. Of course, if you can't look it up, it's just a word that came to me, but it means brother. And after befriending one another, I spoke to him about doing housing. Then my uncle, Bishop Richard Thurman Barnes, he's a bishop in Atlanta, he spoke about me doing housing for veterans. And it dawned on me as we started to establish housing for veterans by my uncle being saved. He needed the help. And, I mean, fortunately,
Now, how's he doing now? What's the situation now? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, see, there's a lot happening with Vietnam veterans. You know, one of the things that really distinguished a Vietnam veteran from a lot of other veterans is how they was looked upon when they returned from combat. And it had a lot to do with what they are dealing with now. Now, Jonathan, for those who want to get in touch with you, what is your contact information?
Our website is www.serene, S-S-E-R-N-E-E, Haven, H-A-V-E-N, .org. My email is JBARNES, JBarnes@serenehaven.org, as well as our call center number is area code 855-5-SERENE. That's 855-573.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Let me just go back over to Zane. Have a few closing words or anything you want to say, Zane?
Well, I would like to say that, again, Mr. Jonathan Barnes, I really thank you guys for the assistance that you gave me. I'm very happy. My daughters and I, they spend this weekend with me. And so actually I'm very happy at the situation we're in at this present time. The girls are okay, and we're starting to keep our family together. But I would like to say to the people out there, you know, sometimes we're selfish in our ways, and we kind of almost look for people to do things for us. But what can we do to help this community and this country become a better place that all of us can work together and live under the same roof, you know?
Okay, thank you, Zane. Thank you, Zane, and thank you, Jonathan. We're going to come back for some closing words at the end. And we're getting ready to move into our voices from the
Ether
section. And we're going to bring in Mr. We have somebody on the line to talk to us about the voice on the Ether section. And we're going to bring, before we have off into move into that section, let me have a word, just a comment from Michelle. telling us about the piece that she would be doing, and then we would move to Andrea on the piece that she would be doing.
Well, I'm going to do my signature piece, which everyone at the Qumran has heard many, many times. But I want to say, if I might, ma'am, what inspired me to write that piece, Judge America, were the testimonies and the experiences of these two beloved brothers, you know, among many other experiences, testimonies, exposing the real evil, injustice, and hypocrisy that America is based on, selling guns and weapons to Viet Cong, you know, and then blaming the veterans when America intentionally did not train them to win that war. It's all about money. And they put the blame on those veterans, most of them black men on the front line cleaning latrines. You know, I have friends that come back and they will never be normal. And some of them are homeless, alcoholics. And I just thank God for what he's doing. God bless you both.
Okay, let me move into the voices for the ether section.
I'm sorry about that.
We're ready.
Good. Good evening. Nyx was the primordial goddess of the night, a shadowy figure. Nyx stood at or near the beginning of creation. Nyx is born of chaos. Her offspring are many and telling. With Erebus, the deity of shadow and darkness, Nyx gave birth to ether, atmosphere. Whoo! It's getting hot up in here. A change in the atmosphere. Voices from the ether. Tonight, we have two angels possessing exceptional power and beauty to grace the data stream with enchanting dialects, weaved words falling from their tongues like honey dripping from silver spoons. So tonight, we have Miss Audrey, Miss Michelle, and we have Miss Andrea. Who would like to go first?
Okay, Andrea has indicated that I'm to go first.
Fabulous. That's a good thing. All right.
Okay. So you ready?
We're ready. Everybody's waiting. The data stream is waiting for your words.
Okay, Tyrone, good to have you with us. We give thanks and praise the Most High, Lord. Have mercy, and thy will be done. This is called Message to God's children. Message to God's progeny. Check it out. If you would just believe and have faith the size of a grain of a mustard seed and then receive God's blessings when in need, all things being within your reach, whatever you can conceive of, then you can achieve. Whatever you can conceive of, then go ahead and proceed. Whatever you can conceive of, please go forth and succeed. Whatever you can conceive of, because if you would just believe and have faith the size of a grain of a mustard seed, for God Almighty will always, always make a way for you to run and run and run and win at this rat's race. God Almighty will always make a way for you to fight and fight and win this fight outright. Again, if you would just believe and have faith the size of a grain of a mustard seed, can you believe? Can you have faith? Can you give thanks? Can you pray? Can you praise? Sometimes you got to wait. But if you would just believe and have faith the size of a grain of a mustard seed, and that's even tinier than me. People are always talking about how I'm so tiny.
Go ahead.
Have faith. Have faith. Give thanks. Give thanks, pray and praise always. Because when I look at you, all I see is beauty. And why would you ever, ever doubt me? I said, when I look at you, all I see is beauty. And we need more beauty and harmony in our community. Again, why would you ever, ever doubt me? Because in our community, it's not about me being better than you. And it's not about you being better than me. But it's about we being the very best that we can possibly be so we can live in peace and harmony in our community. Again, when I look at you, all I see is beauty in the image that God has created you mentally, spiritually, and physically. Why, oh why, oh why would you ever, ever doubt me? You know, you must have been comparing yourself to that freaking Barbie. Stop comparing yourself to that freaking Barbie and be yourself. Be all that God has created you to be. Can you know yourself? Can you be yourself? Can you love yourself in a world trying to make you into everybody else? Can you know yourself? Do you know yourself? Can you love yourself? Do you love yourself? Can you be yourself? Can you be yourself in a world trying to make you into everybody else? Because if you would know yourself, if you would love yourself, if you would be yourself, you would never, ever envy or suffer for jealousy of anybody in our community. And we could finally go forth in peace and love and harmony. Because we got to stop this killing, brothers and sisters. Let's go forth in harmony and peace and love, if you can feel me, because I'm knowing I got to keep my poetry flowing. I got to keep my flowing going. I got to keep my blowing going, because I'm in it to win it. I ain't gonna stop it till I get it. I got these positive seeds and I'm sowing them. Thank God I ain't hoeing yet. I'm living, I'm giving, I'm blowing, and I'm knowing. And I know I'm not just responsible for myself, but I'm responsible for other souls as well. I got these keys that I must ransom from hell to retrieve the souls that are still dwelling in hell. But it's all right, because we got the victory. It's out of sight. God has already given me the insight and the prophecy. But again, like I said previously, it's not about me being better than you. It's not about you being better than me. It's about we living in peace and love and harmony in our community. Because I just say what I saw, that way I keep my vision right. I keep my vision raw. I just do whatever I feel. That way I keep my vibe right. I keep my vibe real. I just do whatever I want to do. I just make sure it's the Most High shining through. I say whatever I got to say. I just make sure it's the Holy Ghost having his way. Because the seeds of greatness were planted in you. But what did you do with them? Because to do nothing with these seeds of greatness is the greatest of all possible sins. And your soul you will lose if you choose to do nothing with those seeds of greatness that were planted in you. Because you're shortchanged yourself. You shortchange God, me, and everybody else. You gotta fight the good fight. You know, you gotta stay up all night. You gotta pay the price. You gotta make the sacrifice. But do something with those seeds of greatness that were planted in you. And that's a message to you, my brothers and sisters, because I got love for you. And we got to come together in this community. We got to have some unity and stop this fighting and killing and slanging and pimping, if you can feel me. Because these are the last days, and you never know who's gonna go tomorrow. The seeds of greatness were planted in you. What did you do with them? Heed this message to God's progeny, if you could feel me, because I got love for you, and I live in this community. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Right, Michelle. Word.
Okay, next we're gonna move over to Mr. Andrea Ross.
Thank you, Melvin. On the microphone, I'm known as Miss AD, and I'm coming at you from the NYC, now from LA's infamous CPT. I'm getting ready to drop a trilogy, a little social commentary, otherwise known as What's Real. And I am telling you what's real. I ain't telling no lies, because it's a day-to-day struggle in this ghetto. Here's why. Man child born to an underage mother. Before he got a name, the little nigga got a number at a county office in that welfare line. Mama sits all day for pennies, nickels, quarters, dimes, board wait till the whole day is through. Three social workers think she got nothing else to do. They got mad stories told on 1,004 faces. It's futuristic slavery of the minority races, chained to a system that is bound to fail. But you don't give a damn, cause your checks in the mail. But it's mental, G-E-N-O side, you know the deal. I ain't telling no lies, I'm simply telling what's real. The man got a plan, terminal, black mind kill. I ain't telling no lies, I'm just telling what's real. I'm telling you what's real. Miss A-D spelling to Y-O-U and you and you. What's real? Check it out. I be E speaking it, be E teaching it, be E preaching it, be E cause it's so real. I'm telling to you and spelling to Y-O-U what's real. Now check it out. Her child grows up. He wanna be a man at the age of 9. A Mac-10 in his hand. He ain't seen his daddy since he was 3. Don't even know that fool's name, but they spell it T-R-E-E. The story goes, tree was tall, stout, yoked up, tatted, ripping, knocking niggas out. Devastating on the trigger, twist, pick your cap, seeing straight to your grave for your R.I.P. nap. But late one night in that hood of South Park. Pop, 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 rang out in the dark. Tree got off a couple, but he was overmatched. Just like that, his life was snatched. Now his mama's left here, burying her son. Another tragedy yet, only one of those scandalous tales yet to be revealed. I ain't telling no lies, I'm telling what's real, and I am telling you what's real. Miss A.D. spelling to Y-O-U and you and you, what's real? So check it out. I B.E. addressing it, B.E. professing it, B.E. confessing it, B.E. cause it's so real. I'm telling to you and spelling to Y-O-U, what's real. Look what happened to him now. His childhood was lost. That's the number one fact. He is fronting gangster style. Don't know how to act. Instead of games like hide and go seek, gaming was ditching school 5 days a week. He was heated, hanging out on the block scene with his pants hanging low. He trying to be mean. He want to be tough. He want to be bad. He want to have things that his daddy never had. Rope chains, dope chains, Versace, Vuitton. But where, oh, where have those simple days gone? He's jacking, illing, then chilling, almost killing, on the run, lying, crying, inside dying. He was dying to be. Way back when, he stood 1 inch from his mama's chin, because now his lesson is learned the hard way. He's locked down doing time day by day. 10 years. They stretched him out and gave him 10 years. Put them bracelets on him for 10 years. He put mama through hell, staring at her baby in a jail cell. 10 years till you know how great freedom do feel. I ain't telling Y-O-U no lie. I'm telling Y-O-U what's real. That man got a plan, terminal, black mind kill. I ain't telling no lie, people. I'm simply telling what's real. Thank you.
What's real with Miss Andrea Ross? What's real with Miss Andrea Ross? I would like to thank our in-studio guest, Mr. Jonathan James Barnes.
Thank you, sir.
Co-founder and executive director of Serene Haven Incorporated.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Zane Smith, and poet, writer, and performing artists Michelle Autry and Andrea Ross. And a special thanks to Jeremy and the Skid Row Studios. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And I leave you with the song that opens the show, Back Together Again by Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway.
Excuse me, sir, if you don't mind me adding, we're not here complaining or trying to discredit whatever the case may be. We are here to provide the service and help eradicate the homelessness amongst the homeless veterans. So if you all would like to support as well, let's come together as a collaboration to eradicate this homelessness amongst the true heroes of this country, the American veteran. Thank you for allowing me to speak, sir.
Oh, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Yes, sir.